As you can already see, I will give my talk about the MIRAI botnet and how those devices, IoT devices, bypass routers. Before I begin, I will just introduce myself. Mainly, I'm a physicist. I'm currently studying physics here at the KIT. I've been a geek for almost as long as I can remember. I have always done anything with computers, and specifically an InfoSec geek for 4 to 5 years. And it's already my fourth 3PM, so I thought it would be time to give a talk myself about something I've done. So, before I begin, I want to introduce the term Internet of Things. As a small definition, it's just some simple item you can find at your home or anywhere. You need to add some sensors or a remote control and add a TCP IP stack, or basically connect it to the internet. And your IoT device is finished. It can be basically anything, from a phone to a watch or some random decoration you can find at your home. It's as long as you connect it to the internet, it's an IoT device. And therefore, a lot of different people are building those. IoT as a trend is on its own really fascinating, and I personally can't wait until they finally build something useful, something I want at my home. But until now, the security aspects heavily outweigh the usefulness, because the most vendors who build IoT devices are not native to IT, which means they have to face those challenges usual IT persons faced again, and which is a real problem, because they, instead of the usual challenges with embedded devices they build, they also have the challenge of considering security, and it's hard enough in the normal IT environment to consider security when building something. And a lot of big players do it wrong, like Sony or Yahoo. And so for embedded devices, it's way harder, because you have real big limits on the hardware. Because for every security aspect you want to build in, you need the processing power, you need special hardware. For example, when you want to implement a TCP IP stack, you have to add additional hardware or better hardware to use SSL or TLS. And also you need to make those devices way more robust, because installing a new OS on your laptop isn't a big problem, but if you want to flash new firmware on those devices, you need to consider this beforehand, because to make sure you can flash the firmware without accidentally bricking those devices, you need to have additional hardware and consider it from the beginning. Because until now, or before the IoT trend, all embedded devices were rather simple. You could use a 15-year-old version of the Linux kernel and put it in a coffee machine, and it would just sit in someone's kitchen. And you don't need to update it. Even if there were security problems, they wouldn't be much of an issue. But if you put those devices on the internet, it has major implications. And yes, everything boils basically down to one reason: money. Because to implement security, you need the personnel, the people who know how to do security, because security isn't a bolt-on option. You can't just bolt on security at the end once you're finished creating your IoT device. You need to build your architecture around it. You need to consider it from the beginning. And that adds to the final cost of the product, like the additional hardware you need to use to have encryption. It all adds to the cost and makes it less likely people will buy your product. And to stay competitive, vendors have to consider this additional cost and weigh how much they value security. Which basically boils down to the MIRAI botnet. which is the result of a huge amount of devices not properly secured. You can see the effects here. It all started with a security researcher's personal blog, and it was hit by a really big denial of service attack. The numbers that came in were huge, several times bigger than anything ever seen before. His DDoS protection provider had to actually let him down because they just couldn't handle the amount of traffic they received. And it just went upwards from there. The malware botnet took down a whole web host. It even basically took down the internet for North America because they attacked a DNS provider and made it impossible to connect to the major services most people use. And I don't believe many of you know the IP address for GitHub or Twitter to connect yourself once the DNS is down. Well, some would change the DNS provider, but it needs knowledge to circumvent those problems. And for the most of the people, the internet just went down. And yes, the numbers were really big. You can see it's 1 terabit per second, or to put it in a more graspable number, 125 gigabytes per second came in on a single host. And with our current infrastructure and servers, those amount of traffic just can't be handled properly. And yes, it's also has been distributed over 400,000 devices, which is also a really huge number because classical DDoS attacks were also built on the number of devices connected to the botnet, but Mirai blew the whole scale. So, how did Mirai infect those devices? A few years ago, somebody invented a tool called Mass Scan, which allows to scan the entire IPv4 space in less than 20 minutes. Which means it's impossible to hide something on the internet. If it's up there, you can't just say nobody will use it or find it because it's hidden. I just didn't tell somebody about it. But if somebody is looking for it, it will be found. And therefore, it's a really bad idea to put old and weak protocols on the internet. For example, Telnet. And that's exactly what Mirai used. It used a small list of default credentials used in many IoT devices, roughly 60 unique combinations, and has been able to infect over 500,000 devices. And this isn't a new or complex mechanism to attack devices. Worms or viruses used it 10 to 15 years ago already. It's nothing new or innovative. Well, something interesting, Mirai did something interesting, on the other hand, because it removed access for competing malware once it infected the host. Which basically means it shut down Telnet behind itself. So, here are some examples from the source code. And yes, they're rather embarrassing. My favorite is the last one, actually, which is just the username root and no password at all. Yes, and it just results in a huge denial of service attack. So, after I read several articles about it, I found out what devices are actually part of the Mirai botnet, which is mostly CCTV cams, digital video recorders, and routers themselves. And this led me to a rather interesting question, which also inspired me to give this talk, which is, why are those devices on the internet? If you ever heard of the name Dan Tandler, you probably know people put stupid stuff on the internet, basically anything. Watch one of his talks, it's rather frightening what people put up there. But the amount of people who put things directly on the internet is not that huge that it could justify this many devices, because after several iterations, there were millions of devices reported to be on the Mirai botnet. And everybody should have something like this at home, a router. And most home routers have built-in firewalls, which should protect you from anything from the outside. And in all the things I read about Mirai, there has been nothing which would indicate that they hacked routers from remotely. And there's also probably a small portion of people who know how to manually configure a port mapping on those routers, which would circumvent a firewall. But it would, in my mind, it's just not enough to give us those numbers. So I had to look for a candidate who would justify or who would explain why those devices are on the internet. It didn't take long, and I found universal plug and play, which is, plug and play is always, let me put it that way. For an end user, it's really convenient, because the majority of the population barely knows what an IP address is. So it's enough, complicated enough for them to set up an IP cam on a network with an IP address, and let alone use port mapping. So Microsoft created the UPnP protocol, which allows to set, network devices to set up themselves. But with every plug-and-play protocol, it's not always the best idea. As we have seen with USB plug-and-play, you give those devices a huge advantage, a huge privileges on your system. So, before I get into how exactly they bypass the routers, I want to explain how the UPnP protocol works. Here's a small example network of devices, and I want to find out any device which runs UPnP. Therefore, I need to send a discovery package, which is sent from my smartphone over this multicast address. Anybody in here knows how IP multicast works? IP broadcasting? Okay, multicasting is, broadcasting means I can send a package to the broadcasting address, which is one fixed IP, and it will be delivered to every client in the network. So I send the package to the router, and he will distribute it to every client connected. Multicasting is rather similar. We have a given IP range into which this IP falls, and every device which wants to listen on a specific multicast channel will subscribe to the multicast channel, to the specific IP on the router. And every time a package is sent to this IP address, the router will distribute it to every subscribed client. So, the discovery package looks something like this. It uses the SSDP protocol, which is the simple service discovery protocol. It's really HTTP-like, and for example, this package is the classical discovery package in which we are looking for every service running on every host, which would be the classical discovery package I send once I initially get into the network. After that, I get an answer from every machine running UPnP, which would look something like this. It would give back a list of services it's running, and most importantly, the location, which is an XML file which describes how I can talk to these services. And now that I know on which hosts, which services are running, I can initiate a TCP connection and talk to it using SOAP. And SOAP is just a protocol which exchange XML back and forth. Here's a small example. I just have an usual XML file and can set arguments or get those from this server. So, and now comes the interesting part, which is called IGD, the Internet Gateway Device Port Control Protocol, which means UPnP has become a major standard in the last few years. And therefore, it's installed, by default installed on every home router. And part of this UPnP stack is the IGD protocol, which allows every device on your network to configure the firewall, or configure port mappings. So every device you put on your network can just send a package, UPnP package, to your router and reconfigure your firewall. So, after I found this out, obviously I wanted to test it out on my own network. But unfortunately, I don't have IoT devices at home. You probably can guess why. So I have no CCTV cameras available, no DVRs. And I have a router, but I had to learn the hard way several times, don't mess with production systems. And I worked with my router a little bit, but not too far that I would feel uncomfortable. So I had to look at my home, what would be, what could deliver the specifications for a smart device. And the only thing I found was a multifunction printer. So, once I got my smart device, I had to think about how do I scan for a network device? Probably anybody knows the standard tool for scanning on a network? Exactly. Initially, I thought I could write it myself with a short Python script and Scapy, but I thought, well, I'm a little bit lazy. I'm always short on time, and if somebody already did it, why reinvent the wheel? So, NMAP. So, I looked into NMAP and looked if somebody already did something with UPnP, and I found the broadcast UPnP info script. Because NMAP has the NSE, so the NSE scripting engine, which allows people to enhance NMAP's capabilities using Lua scripts. So anybody can write their own scripts and enhance the scanning capabilities of NMAP. They already had a needed example for how to use this command, but I immediately got an error. Because somehow NMAP didn't know how to handle this broadcasting, how it was done in the script. Or maybe it was just my laptop, but I'm not quite sure about it. I didn't want to mess too much about with it, because I'm not that much into the NSE scripting engine, and to look what exactly went wrong is one of my next projects. So, I thought, okay, broadcasting is not an option, what to do? Scan every single host on its own. In my network, it's not a big problem. I only have around 265 hosts, maximum. So I just had to scan the whole IP range, and I actually found two hosts. But as it turned out, the only two hosts I found were my router and the Wi-Fi repeater. I didn't find the printer, which was rather unsatisfying. And there was another thing. I only found the media server description file. But I wanted the IGD, which brought me back to a little bit of research. And I randomly found a Rapid7 blog entry. Rapid7 is the company which currently owns and runs Metasploit. And around 4 years ago, there was a researcher who has done a lot with the UPnP. I will give you a link later, because his findings are very interesting. And in this around this time, a lot of people looked into UPnP, and somebody created an auxiliary module to scan for UPnP in Metasploit. So I thought, well, it couldn't hurt to run another scan, but I also didn't find my printer, which wasn't very surprising. But I found a more general description file of SFBox desk here. So I just browsed to this location with my browser, and here's an example for how those XML files can look. Here at the top, you can see the UPnP version, which is 1.0. You can already also see it here. And I get some information about the device, the icon list, and most importantly, the service list. But unfortunately, it's also just one service. So, whoops. I looked, well, if I can find IGD, I please can look into this media server. I found the icon list again, a small description, and several services like Connect Directory, Content Directory, the Connection Manager. Well, commands you can use for a media server, obviously. So, after I didn't find anything I actually wanted, I had to go back to research. And it turned out, Fritzbox deactivated IGD per default within the last few iterations of their home routers. Somewhere around the router version 7300, I guess. Well, but within the least 4 years, at least, once they got all this information from this researcher who've done something with it. Which means I can manually activate those device UPnP IGD access for single devices and with the online configuration of the router. But there was something else. I found this sentence in my settings, which was rather confusing because it seems like I should be able to configure every IGD port mappings for every device I don't specifically set in my configurations. But with my scanning, I just haven't been able to confirm my theory. At the moment, I just have two possible theories to explain this. Either my router is just too new, and which would mean IoT devices combined with not the newest router models would allow those devices to bypass the firewalls. Or I have to use a standard way to communicate with IGD, which isn't listed in the service list. But at this point, I didn't want to mess around with my router too much. And I didn't have a spare router at home I could use. Which means it would be really interesting to find out if any other routers allow IGD access. And if any of you came home after the GPN, it would be really cool if you could just run the Nmap scan yourself and look if you can find IGD access, IGD description file on your routers. And send me whether or not you found anything. Here's the URL for upnphex.org, which is the researcher who looked into UPnP 4 years ago. He found several flaws in the UPnP implementation, which, for example, allowed remote code execution or to set port mapping from the outside on your routers. They have already been fixed within the last few years, but those are major things at the time, which are really cool to read into. Also, there's more details about how to configure port mappings with IGD, but not enough for me to create a package I could send to my router, which is the big point why I couldn't go further. This point. Well, UPnP didn't work as much for me at this point, so I thought, well, at least I could find out where my printer is. Because I know for a fact I can communicate with it without the need to enter my IP address into my computer. And I know for a fact if I use one of the iDevices of my parents, I can just print something on it. So, this was the major clue for me, the iDevices. And once I have been through Microsoft's UPnP, I had to look for Apple's alternative, which is Bonsure. It's also a service discovery protocol, and I personally like it more than UPnP because it's built also in multicast, but with a DNS server in the background, which means every device running Bonsure has a DNS server in the background, and you can communicate with that. So it's basically the same setup like in UPnP, but you have a different multicast IP and port. You get back the answers from those devices running Bonsure, and those are examples for the DNS records. Because it's built up of the local network, whether or not which protocol your service is using, UDP or TCP, what kind of service you're running on your system, like music, HTTP, or a printer, and then you can name it. And on the server side, it looks the service record for the DNS server looks something like this. You have the string I just showed you, time to live, service record, port mapping, and the location of the device, the IP address, basically. So, with this, I should be able to print on my printer, or find my printer. So, I had to go back to scanning, which means It was just a DNS server. So I could use one of the standard DNS tools, which in NMAP is DNS service discovery. For my router, I got back nothing, which isn't very surprising because UDPMP became a standard and implemented in most home routers, but Bonjour isn't. I don't know the exact reasons, but I believe it has something to do with licensing or how Apple handles those piece of software. For my printer, on the other hand, I got a really long list of information back. Here's a short overview of the services I found, which is the simple web server running on my printer, two printer services, and in the last one is probably AppPrint. I say probably because I in the information I found, I had some information about what my printer could do, like duplex printing, scanning, or giving it custom paper. But I also found this admin URL, which just routed me back to the configuration interface of my printer. So, I'm mostly finished with my research and scanning part of my talk, and now I want to come to the future of the Mira botnet for the end, which means the Mira botnet itself has become publicly accessible, source code. It has been published shortly after it was discovered. And people are enhancing it nonstop. And one of the newest iterations of the Mira botnet is the application layer for the Mira, which means instead of bombarding a single server with IP packets, you can send fewer packets, but instead of attacking the bandwidth limitations, you attack the CPU limitations. Because you just give the server more to do or give it complicated commands to execute, which take much of the CPU, and you can reach the same effects you did beforehand, but with fewer packages, which makes the Mira Butler way more dangerous. It is also being combined with other malware, like WannaCry here. I'm pretty sure all of you heard about it, because it has even been covered in normal news. And if you've heard about it, you probably know the WannaCry worm works that in a way that it encrypts your hard disk if it can't reach a certain domain. And to reactivate, and this domain has been purchased and activated by a security researcher in his work process to analyze what this malware does. And therefore, he accidentally shut down the whole botnet, the whole worm. And to reverse this activation, somebody implemented the Mira botnet to attack the WannaCry server of the domain, so that the WannaCry worm won't get an answer back, which would reactivate all those already infected devices and encrypt the hard drives, which means they don't have to spread a newer version, but could reactivate the version they already put out. On the other side, there are vigilante hackers, which try to shut down Mirai. The most famous is probably BrickerBot, which is also a rather simple script. It acts basically the same way as Mirai. It looks for open telnet ports on the internet, connects to it, and the first iterations were rather specific. They looked up if embedded hardware is connected to the device, especially memory. Once they found it, they deleted everything. They reconfigured the Linux kernel, so only one process at a time can work. And they basically bricked the device. So that they can't even flash new firmware, and they have to be sent back to the vendor. Newer iterations don't check if it's an embedded device. They just prick everything with telnet and default credentials. And they're also spreading way more aggressively. I guess the first iteration was around several hundred per day, and the newer versions are in the thousands per day. So, what will the future of IoT hold for us? Well, the trend is really growing at the moment. Way more people are creating IoT devices, more vendors are interested in it, and estimations show that we will have millions, if not even billions, of IoT devices within the next 5 to 10 years. And it's already hard enough for our infrastructure to handle the devices on their own, let alone if they're being used maliciously. So if they don't do something about it soon, we will have real problems at our hands. And in my eyes, the main fault, or basically the entire fault, lies by the vendors who create those insecure devices. Because there's no other solution at the moment. The home user can't be expected to fix those security problems. Hackers can try, but in the legal range, it's also very limited what they can do. And yeah, I don't see brightly for our future, but I believe there will be some way to fix this, and we will find it. So this ends my talk. If you scan yourself and want to tell me what you found, if you found IGD on your home routers, just give me a short message on Twitter or my email address and let me know if you found something. Thank you for coming to my talk. Any questions? Yeah. Okay.
Also meinst du, dass, jeder einzelne Hersteller von IoT-Devices nachbessern muss, oder ist es nicht besser, bei den Routern zu überprüfen? Oder die Router müssten sicherer sein, weil sie versprechen uns, dass sie uns schützen, ja, also kein eingehender Traffic ist. Und wenn es eine Schwachstelle in diesem Protokoll gibt, UPnP, muss das nicht deaktiviert werden an der Stelle? Ist das nicht der effizientere Punkt anzusetzen?
Es ist sicherlich eine Idee, an den Routern ranzugehen und UPnP zu deaktivieren. Das kannst du auch bei deinem... Moment, soll ich... Soll ich antworten in Englisch oder German? Oh, okay, ich antworte einfach auf Deutsch. Okay, es ist möglich, den UPnP bei dir zu Hause auf dem Router zu deaktivieren. Das kannst du auch machen, einfach indem du den Haken deinen Einstellungen setzt. Die Sache ist die, es gibt bessere Wege, nach Hause zu telefonieren, als ein Loch in die Firewall zu bauen. Und man kann UPnP als Schwachstelle sehen, aber jeder Hacker, der bei dir schon im Netzwerk ist, hat einfachere Methoden nach Hause, sich zu verbinden. Reverse TCP Shell ist wahrscheinlich ein Begriff, den du kennst. Also es ist einfacher nach Hause, sich nach Hause zu verbinden, als ein Loch in die Firewall zu machen.
Aber da hast du ja schon ein Problem, da ist ja schon jemand reingekommen bei dir. Da hast du ja schon ein ziemlich großes Problem, wenn jemand bei dir drin ist.
Ja, allerdings, wenn du ein IoT-Gerät bei dir zu Hause hast, dann kann es auch andere Technik benutzen, als ein Loch in die Firewall zu machen, um nach Hause sie zu verbinden.
Aber da hast du dir ja schon ein schadhaftes Gerät schon reingeholt. Ja?
Hast du so auch, wenn du ein IoT-Device nimmst. Allerdings, es ist halt so, du hast halt die Wahl, wenn du eine Verbindung zurückhaben willst. Kannst du entweder ein Loch in die Firewall machen, was auch Verbindungen von außen zurückerlauben würde, oder du kannst einfach eine Verbindung nach draußen machen, wie zum Beispiel du mit deinem Laptop auch machst oder Computer, wenn du surfst. Da sind die Firewall-Einstellungen ja auch so, dass du Verbindungen nach außen und Antworten darauf erlaubt sind. Aber nicht, dass irgendjemand reinkommen kann bei dir. Und wenn du ein IoT-Gerät hast, das du auch wirklich gekauft hast, das nie keine Schadsoftware ist, dann wäre es für dieses Gerät auch sinnvoller, eine sichere Verbindung nach außen zu machen, als ein Loch in die Firewall.
Gibt's eine konkrete Technologie, die du jetzt empfehlen könntest für einen IoT-Vendor? Also was soll man nutzen, wenn nicht UPnP?
Eine konkrete Technologie kann ich nicht empfehlen. Es kommt natürlich auf den Einsatzbereich an. Es gibt allerdings bessere Techniken. Man könnte zum Beispiel einen Tunnel über HTTPS erstellen, dass du einfach eine Verbindung wieder zurück hast. Du kannst dich mit der Datenbank sicher verbinden. Es gibt andere Wege, sich nach draußen über Netzwerken zu verbinden, außer Löcher in die Firewall zu machen. Okay. natürlich ist es ein Problem, dann sich wieder zurückzuverbinden, wenn du auch einen Channel von außen nach innen haben willst. Die Herausforderung ist ein bisschen kniffliger und da habe ich keine Standardlösung für. Es gibt aber Lösungen dafür und es haben auch Leute Wege gefunden. Allein Eventing-Systems oder so, wie zum Beispiel bei der Batch, die wir jetzt haben, bei dem Push-Notifier. Da gibt es auch Wege, sich Informationen vom Server zum Client zu bringen, ohne dass eine Direktverbindung. Okay, ja, ist blöd gesagt, aber ich glaube, du verstehst, was ich meine, oder? Okay.
Ich weiß nicht, ob es schon gesagt worden ist, aber weil mir das persönlich ein großes Anliegen ist, UPnP ist vielleicht keine tolle Technik, aber die Idee, dass man da von außen Ports nach innen öffnen kann, ist nicht schlecht. Es gibt viele, viele Dinge, die das nutzen, zum Beispiel, ich weiß nicht, wer das kennt, SyncThing, zum Datensynchronisieren, die benutzen das und die funktionieren nicht wirklich ohne sowas. Also ja. Ich würde gerne einmal darauf hinweisen, dass das Techniken sind, die man braucht, um Peer-to-Peer-Netzwerke zum Beispiel zu bauen, die wir eigentlich alle ganz gern haben.
Genau, deswegen ist auch ein Grund dafür, dass das Problem eher bei den Herstellern liegt als bei den Routern. Weil wenn die eine andere Technik nehmen, bleibt die einsatzfähig und trotzdem sicher.
Ich würde die Frage vielleicht mal genereller stellen. Was hat dieses ganze Zeug eigentlich im Internet verloren? Also vielleicht den Ansatz, die Überlegung, diese Geräte, auch wenn sie eine Netzwerkverbindung brauchen, einfach in ein Netz einzusperren, wo sie keinen Zugang nach draußen haben.
Ja, das ist eigentlich auch eine gute Idee, wenn man die weghaben will. Es gibt auch Ansätze, bei denen es mit Home-Automation und IoT-Netzwerken geht, bei dem es einen zentralen Punkt gibt, auf den die gebündelt sind. Das heißt, man hat ein Netzwerk zu Hause und einen zentralen Punkt, der nach außen kommuniziert. Problem ist aber wieder, der Hersteller entscheidet, wie das Netzwerk am Ende aussieht, was er baut und wie er es implementiert. Und ja, damit kommen halt auch Probleme.
Also einen Ansatz, den ich hätte, zum wie man die Geräte so baut, dass sie nicht ins Internet kommunizieren, wäre zum Beispiel mit IPv6. Da konfiguriert sich jedes Gerät für seinen Interface eine Link-Local-Adresse, die ist nicht routbar ins Internet, kann aber verwendet werden, um im Netzwerk zu kommunizieren. Und das wäre meiner Meinung nach eigentlich genau das Richtige für Kommunikation, die nur im Netzwerk stattfinden soll, dass man sich erst gar keine globale Adresse konfiguriert, sondern nur eine Link-Local-Adresse.
Vielleicht nochmal ein Statement dazu, gar nicht so sehr die Frage. Also ich persönlich sehe das Problem auch durchaus bei den Herstellern. Wenn wir immer wieder Geräte haben, die halt nur schlecht oder gar nicht abgesichert sind, solange Hersteller Geräte ausliefern, die Benutzer haben, die irgendwie erreichbar sind und Standardpasswörter gesetzt haben, werden wir diese Probleme in anderen Facetten immer wieder haben. Ich glaube, die Hersteller sind da einfach in der Pflicht, Geräte abzuliefern, die ausreichend abgesichert sind, dem Stand der Technik entsprechen und kein 5 Jahre altes Kernel besitzen oder andere Technologien und die auch für eine gewisse Zeit noch Updates bekommen. Weil dann weiß ich beim Kauf, ich bekomme 5 Jahre Updates auf dieses Internet of Shit Device und danach muss ich es wegwerfen, weil dann ist es unsicher. Und dann bin ich als Kunde auch irgendwo in der Situation, dass ich mit solchen Geräten umgehen kann. Und das wird, denke ich, auch der Großteil der Bevölkerung lernen müssen, dass das mit solchen Geräten so ist.
Ja, nur nochmal zu diesem Argument, dass man, was haben IoT-Devices überhaupt zu suchen? Also wir können ja auch zurück in die Steinzeit gehen und Laptops wegschmeißen, weil man die halt hacken kann, aber es ist halt manchmal praktisch, wenn man von überall über eine Internetverbindung irgendwas bei sich zu Hause steuern kann. Oder, weil das wird halt immer so schlecht geredet in diesen Hacker-Zirkeln, wenn man was im Internet hat, aber das kann doch nützlich sein.
Das stimmt. Also ich muss auch generell sagen, IoT an sich ist keine schlechte Idee. Ich finde es auch nicht, ich finde es wie gesagt faszinierend und ich bin gespannt, was noch alles kommen wird. Aber die Sicherheitsaspekte überwiegen halt im Moment sehr viel zu stark. Und ich glaube, dadurch hat es vor allem in Hackerzirkeln und Kreisen halt diesen schlechten Ruf. Weil die Probleme, die wir halt schon gelöst haben, die haben die erst vor sich. Mit den Embedded Devices zu lösen. Und es ist halt nicht einfach, Sicherheit zu, also Security einzubauen und zu beachten. Es ist auch für uns ist es immer noch eine Herausforderung und für die meisten klassischen Mitspieler, wie ich auch schon gesagt habe, immer noch ein großes Problem. Und für im Prinzip einen ganzen Wirtschaftszweig, der gerade ganz neu vor diesem Problem steht, ist es halt eine richtige Herausforderung.
Aber es kann nicht die Lösung sein,
aufzugeben. Das nicht.
Ich will meine Aussage wiederholen.
Ja.
Es kann doch nicht die Lösung sein, aufzugeben.
Nee, kann es nicht.
So when Mariah was first coming out and it was propagating around, was it just from, you said they used mass scan to look for anything open on telnet, and then was it sort of like self-replicating or always
yes.
just from one to...
It was self-replicating. Once Mariah infected an IoT device, it shuts down the access behind it and scans the rest of the internet for available devices.
Okay.
I forgot to mention it. I planned to say it, but sorry. Yes, it's self-replicating.
Also vielleicht noch zu dem, dass die Hersteller ordentliche Geräte liefern müssen. Ich persönlich sehe es als utopisch an, dass wir ein halbwegs ordentliches Sicherheitslevel bekommen. Wir wissen, dass wir aus China, aus dem Hinterhof alles Mögliche geliefert bekommen. Das wäre etwas, was wir versuchen könnten, in Deutschland mit Richtlinien durchzusetzen. Aber das Internet ist nicht Deutschland. Das Internet ist weltweit und dementsprechend wird es utopisch sein, wenn wir andere Lösungen brauchen.
Genau. Die Richtlinien sind auch eine große Sache, über die ich mir auch viele Gedanken gemacht habe. Es ist ein ziemlich zweischneidiges Schwert. Auf der einen Seite, wir könnten Regulationen auf EU-Ebene umsetzen, genauso wie alle, wie wir für alle anderen Importwaren auch haben, die vorgeben müssen, dass Datenbanken verschlüsselt sein müssen, also Passwörter verschlüsselt sein müssen, andere Techniken eingesetzt werden müssen. Regulationen sind auf der anderen Hand ziemlich langwierig und können sehr hinterherhinken. Also es wäre eine Möglichkeit, Standards einzuführen. Es wird aber Herstellern auch Entschuldigungen dafür geben, alte Regulationen zu benutzen und nur das Minimum einzubauen, anstatt selber Sachen zu machen. Und natürlich könnte es auch sein, dass die Regulationen dann auch wieder Blödsinn beinhalten, der dann umgesetzt werden muss. Also Regulationen sind eine Idee, die könnten eventuell helfen, aber es ist unwahrscheinlich, dass sie die Lösung sind.
Einen möglichen Ansatz, den ich noch sehe, ist getrenntes VLAN zum Beispiel. Die neuen Fritzboxen unterstützen auch schon ein Gastnetzwerk, ein Gast-WLAN. Da könnte man das einfach erweitern um ein zusätzliches Netzwerk, das getrennt ist von dem eigentlichen Rechnernetzwerk für zum Beispiel so IoT-Devices.
Genau. Es gibt viele Techniken, die man auch neuere Techniken, die man einsetzen kann, um es gerade zu verhindern, dass halt, dass also gerade kleinere Netzwerke aufzubauen. Und es gibt auch bessere Techniken. Aber UPnP wurde halt auch eingesetzt und es ist halt nicht das Schönste, einfach Löcher in die Firewall zu machen. Okay, dann danke, dass ihr gekommen seid.